You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family. Well, hi, everybody. Glenn the Geek back with you from the Horse Radio Network. I'm founder of the Horse Radio Network and host of Horses in the Morning. We just passed our 4,000th episode on Horses in the Morning. It's one of the longest-running daily podcasts in the world, and it's all about horses. How cool is that? We want to welcome you to the WESA Retail Roundup. The Retail Roundup is your go-to virtual hub for all things retail. Join panel discussions, learn from webinars, share your thoughts, ask questions, and connect with your community. We host these events every Thursday. Actually, my wife, Jennifer, does the other half of the podcast that she comes out every other week, and then the Retail Roundup is the other times of the month. And of course, we have less than a month away now from WESA, from the trade show in August. So everybody's gearing up for that, I am sure. I will not be at this one. Hopefully be there in January again. I'm sorry to miss it. This would be number 39, I think, for me to the trade show. So anyway, I know you guys are all going to have a great time at the trade show. Well, today we're talking about the financial side of retail that shouldn't get overlooked, understanding your numbers, managing inventory, protecting cash flow, and building a business that's profitable year after year. Christine Gray is the founder and CEO of She Profits Now. For more than 25 years, Christine has specialized in helping independent retailers, boutiques, wholesalers, and product-based businesses improve profitability through financial strategy, inventory planning, accounting, tax planning, and business coaching. Today, she's here to help all of us understand all of this better. So, Christine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Glenn. I am very excited to be here because no matter what this conversation is, it matters. It matters for independent small retailers. It is an area outside of our incredible creative talent that most of your listeners maybe aren't really comfortable with. So I'm hoping that today in this conversation, we can normalize all things finances, the discussion around finances, have some takeaways for your listeners so that they can make some valuable use of this time and start to lean into all things finance for their business. So I'm excited. Thank you.
We all tend to, entrepreneurs who are running their own businesses tend to be creative people, right? We're all on the creative side. So we hate this. This is a side that we don't like to spend a whole lot of time on. And I discovered when we were running our tax shop that that was a mistake. And we discovered that quickly, that we really had to, you know, focus on that in addition to the fun side of marketing and all that that we have to do as well, which I considered more fun. But this side is so important, and that's why we're talking about it today. What are the metrics that every retailer should know by heart that you should pay attention to all the time?
No matter what, right? Yeah. So first off, because it can be really overwhelming to know where to start with the metrics, there's about 16 primary sales, customer, inventory, and financial metrics that our independent retailers need to ultimately know. But if we were to group this into a small group of metrics that will really truly tell you at the foresight of right at the beginning of whether your business is creating financial strength, the very first, without a doubt, is going to be gross profit margin. And it goes deeper than just gross profit margin, right? It's why is that number what it is and what is it telling you is the depths of it. But you should know what it is both in dollars and as a percentage. And revenue is going to tell you, so gross profit margin, obviously, the reason why we want to focus on it is that most of our retailers are focused on revenue. And revenue is their vanity. Revenue is their success story. Revenue is, you know, the really what stimulates that creativity for themselves because we're chasing revenue. But instead, if we start to look at gross margin, it's going to tell us how much money is remaining
in our business. But that's so much less than revenue. Revenue is so much more fun.
I know. It's not as much fun. I know. The creative part is the revenue side. That's the creative part. That's why we go to market. That's why
we like hitting that half a million and million and 2 million and 5 million. We like hitting those numbers.
I know, but I'm always like, you know what? What's revenue? And you're going to hear me say this a couple of times in this podcast because I really lean into it. Is revenue is just activity in your business. Where profitability, that's sustainability, that's your creative resources, that's your opportunity, is all things profit, but it's got to start at the top. And that's why gross margin is going to be first and foremost what we need to focus on, because it is telling you what remains in your business after you've paid for the product and what dollar amount and percentage is still available for you to pay your team, to cover your operating expenses, more importantly, to pay yourself and to create that profitability so that you can scale, let alone sustain. right? So that would be number one. The second one, so I'm just going to give you a small little group here. The second one is going to be your inventory turn and your sell through. It is far too often that I see retailers come to us because they're in cash flow stress. And we can nail it right down to their inventory is turning way too slow, which causes them to have to mark down unnecessarily, right? Like vanity markdowns to get rid of inventory that we should have never bought in the first place because it's been sitting there and it's been aging. It's not moving quick enough. So whether you're earning an adequate return on your cash that's tied up, that story is told in your inventory turn rate. So traditionally, an inventory turn rate between 5 and 6, depending on your unique, your specialty within this industry, is going to be right where you want to be, right? The third is operating profit. So you can see I'm really bringing myself through a financial statement, per se, is operating profit. So if we first have our gross margin, then we're being told the story of how well our inventory is performing through inventory turn. Now that third metric is operating profit itself. What is it costing you to run this business? And is your business able to produce bottom line profit before, so that you have profit and cash flow to pay your debts for those owners' distributions in cash after it pays all of its expenses. And traditionally, I would say if I were to lean into operating profit, where I see the largest leak is going to definitely be in your compensation category. So first off, two leaks in a business traditionally is inventory and margins, and then your compensation category. That is always where we first start to look for opportunity dollars in our business.
Yeah. So let's talk about inventory. What are the warning signs that it obviously turn? What do you like to see in turn anyway? Is there a standard rule or is there a rule of thumb?
There's a standard rule to start from and a rule of thumb to start from, knowing that you have to give it some variation and some iteration based on your own independent specialty. So if I were to look at a standard rule of thumb, I would want to turn a business between 5 and 6 times, like your inventory between 5 and 6 times a year. And inventory turn rate for any entry level listeners, that just means that every dollar you have invested into your inventory that's producing profit, you're turning that dollar into profit 5 to 6 times a year. So why would we choose to turn it into profit 3 times a year with an inventory turn of 3? When we can instead better plan our inventory purchases so that we're actually buying to sell through, not just buying to see it sit on our shelves, and achieve a double that, right? Like a 6 times turn on our profit. Same dollar invested, 6 times the profit versus 3 times the profit on gross profit margin. So that's where turn really comes in. And it's definitely an issue in our industry. And it starts from not having an inventory plan. It starts from not really truly understanding what your customers are looking for, at what time of year, in what product mix, at what volume, and making sure that when we go to market, when we go to Wesson, August and January, that we have a plan and we're disciplined and we're following the plan. But the plan is also curated to give us the highest level of return on investment and highest level, right? Like return just in general. Yeah.
It's hard because in our world, especially, right, in the horse world, you do have those products that you may sell twice a year, but if you don't have it, you're not considered a store, right? It's that kind of thing. And that's always the hard decision that you have to make in each product, not only category, but down to each product, right? Each SKU do I continue to carry this or don't I? Because I don't turn it very often, but yet the person coming in here is expecting me to have it because I'm a tack shop.
Yeah. And I would definitely, to be that, that's where that independent specialty comes in, where you have to say, all right, I can't turn 5 to 6 times because my specialty doesn't allow me to. But how can you adapt your specialty? So a tack shop, how can you adapt your specialty to carry products that maybe do turn quicker? They're maybe more consumable. They serve a different purpose and a different need at a different stage of the amount of time that we needed in between. That's what creates the turn. Consumables is obviously a really great example of that. Not to say that would fit into a tack shop, but to find
a product mix. No, it does. It does. Yeah.
Does it? Yeah. Or I would suppose, yeah. And forgive me for not being completely embedded into the equine the Western industries. So you guys have to forgive me when you're listening to this. All independent specialty retail, but each specialty is unique in and of itself in each industry. So where I would start with, though, is looking at your product mix. Yes, you have to have those slow turning items. Those are your core. There may be even your loss leaders coming in to get the customer through the door.
We used a 20% rule there. It shouldn't mm-hmm. be more than 20% of your whole inventory is those products, yes. those yep. particular products.
I love that.
So with the five times turn, the 80% was where that came in, right? So,
exactly.
But you kind of have to decide which products fall into that 20% and then stick to it because we tend to want to carry more than we should carry, right? That's
right. Yeah, volume. What is your ideal volume? But your inventory plan is going to tell you that. So if we think about inventory as a whole, I mean, that's your largest investment in your business. That's your first level of opportunity to produce profit that will cover overhead and pay your own personal bills through profit and owner's pay at the tail end of this. So if inventory is your core responsibility to gain first level profit in your business, it's sitting down and understanding what's that optimization strategy. That is actually one of the things that we do through our Financially Fabulous coaching program is we teach our retailers to learn how to optimize inventory through product mix, through term variations by each category, right? Like every category is going to turn differently. Every category is going to have a different markup strategy in your business. And if you take the weighted average of your product mix through those categories, you can see the numbers improve when you start to set it as a standard to say, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to come up with an optimization strategy, I'm going to play different scenarios, and then I'm going to follow that 80-20 rule in my optimization strategy. It becomes a business policy almost to say, I'm not going to buy inventory that doesn't fit into this inventory optimization strategy and this inventory optimization strategy, product mix, turn, and margin at your initial markup is going to be what feeds my inventory buy to sell. We actually call it an inventory buy to sell here at She Profits now because an inventory open to buy, it just feels like almost too open, right? It's just like an open to buy, just blah, blah, blah. This is more about you're buying it to sell it at the highest level of profit margin that you can. So let's go in with a plan. And that is like a business rule. If it's not on the plan to buy it to sell it, then it doesn't get bought.
That keeps you from overbuying it. That also keeps you from overbuying when you show up at a WESA and you want to buy everything, right? I mean, with trade show.
Walked that WESA floor last January when I was at Dallas. So you said you weren't going to be there in August. I won't either. I'll actually be there in January again. I walked the floor and I got to tell you, the Western industry is the most beautiful industry of all. To go to that show, like I've been to the, you know, the surf show and the dance shows and all that. When I walk the WESA floor, I'm just like, everybody even walking the floor is gorgeous, let alone the product and how they display it. So you guys just live in a very amazing
industry.
And the
quantity. There's so much temptation there as a buyer, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is the other thing, which is another problem, because
as temptation.
Yeah, exactly. So what reports should a retailer or small wholesaler, for that matter, small to medium-sized wholesaler, what should they be reviewing every month? And I will say that over 20 years ago, this is all much easier reporting-wise than it was 20 mm-hmm. years ago, for sure.
Right. Mm. So I can take this from two different angles. In your business, you have two data points. You have your point of sale system is your first data point. You have reports that you should be reviewing at all times in your point of sale system. Then your financials in your accounting and bookkeeping system is your second set of data points. But really, truly, the two of them combined and how the money starts at the revenue or at the sales receipt and flows through your business into how it lands on your financials at the profit statement requires you to pull reports from both and understand how they work together in your entire business ecosystem, right? Like point of sale reports independent of your financial reports aren't as powerful. You put the two together and you'll learn how the metrics talk to each other and how that leads into you knowing and understanding what's happening in the operation is very, very powerful. So I would first start out with, if Are most of your users on Shopify, I would assume?
I would assume, yeah. That's a good question, but I think probably most of them are.
I would assume, yeah. We coach to Shopify, like in our coaching programs, everything, all examples in our financial GPS system that follows the money through the business for decision making. That's all based on Shopify, so I'll speak to that language. But if you're in Shopify, you can actually go in and data explore and build a report that gives you, so you write this down, listeners, right? One report in Shopify has the potential to give you your net sales, your discounts, your cost of goods sold, your ending inventory by category. And the reason I say by category with emphasis is that if you have not organized your Shopify product type field to be very strategic for your categories that you're selling in, like tech being one category, right? So maybe if you're in women's clothing, accessories, tech, like kind of like a multi-specialty, you would want to make sure that you have, like, say, tops over, tops under, bottoms, denim, and then you'd slip into like accessories, jewelry, tech, all the things. Those would be your product types in Shopify. They've got to be organized. And how you organize them is also leads into then what your inventory open to buy is right. So that's a layer of making sure that your point of sale is good data in for good data out. Mm-hmm. And it always starts at the inventory side of it. So product ending inventory, because you've got to know where your ending inventory is. Cost of goods sold, if I didn't say that. But here's another one, is average order value, new customers, returning customers, and returning customer orders. That little batch of data right there will tell you everything you need to know about how efficiently you're selling in your business right there. It's literally everything that we put. That one report pulls all of the information we need to be able to understand your sales, customer, and inventory metrics all the way down by category, by season, by month. So it's very powerful because it helps us understand how you're selling, like how much is your customer buying? How much can we improve revenue just on average order value? Are you turning new customers into returning customers? How often are they returning to your store? So that's a lot, right? Like, but one report, you can start to see the trends in different areas of decision-making. You're making decisions on cost of goods. You're making decisions on average order value, on how you market to new customers, how you bring your returning customer back. That all shows up. That's your point of sale system. And then obviously how well your business is performing financially, when you earn that dollar with a revenue, with a receipt, with a customer sale, how is it showing up on your profit and loss statement in your bookkeeping bottom line? So your income statement every single month unconditionally should be a rule that you run your business by. Don't allow your accountant and your bookkeeper to give them to you every 4 months, every 5 months, at the end of the year, right before taxes, after the year closes, just to get to the tax return. I can't say enough how important it is for you to see your financials every single month, because that gives you the leverage to start to identify leaks, areas of loss in the operating activities, so that you can preserve some of those revenue dollars, right? Another thing here too, I know I'm kind of going broad on that question, Glenn, right? Is make sure that when you get your financials, your income statement every month, make sure that sales on your income statement is equivalent to the sales receipts net on your point of sale system. And it's not just an accumulation of deposits, because that's a major, it's an error from a bookkeeper. It's lazy bookkeeping. Deposits does not equal revenue. Sales receipts equals revenue, because deposits is an accumulation of sales tax.
Oh, that's true. It includes everything.
And additions. It's less your merchant services in many instances. It doesn't give you a true picture, but also on your income statement, your profit and loss, major report in your business, your cost of goods sold on that income statement should be the actual cost of the product sold that comes out of your point of sale system, not the cost of what you purchased that month. Mm. Purchases is an asset. So right. I'm really going deep here, right?
No, but I mean, we're all dealing with this deep, right? I mean, that's
right. Like, that's what this conversation is about. Yep. So two rules on your income statement is revenue equals sales receipts, and cost of goods sold equals the actual cost of the product sold, not what you purchased for inventory to be sold later. And that is what is going to give you one of that top metric that I just gave you, your gross margin on your financials. You're actually going to have that number right in front of you. And then expenses traditionally will just show up as they occur, cash basis, which will give you your true profitability. And if you follow those basics of bookkeeping, like actual, like not lazy bookkeeping, you will know what your profit is at the end of each month, and you will know where you need to start to focus.
So I think one of the mistakes we made, and unfortunately we made it twice, and we didn't make it a third time with some of the businesses I've had, is not having a bookkeeper in the beginning and figuring I could do it all myself, right? And that was a big mistake. We should have from the beginning, or somebody like you to help consult with it, because you will make more if you have somebody on your side that actually knows what they're doing. So like I had I was in the beginning of podcasting, yet I had a mentor from the beginning of podcasting who had been in it a little longer than me. And he's still my mentor today, 20 years later. So I think that's so important, yet that's probably a mistake you see all the time.
It is. It is. And I love the fact that you have a mentor, even though you've been doing this as long as you have, right? It's about hiring somebody that specializes in something that you don't have time to immerse yourself in and become an expert. And so in our
industry, it's always changing. It's always changing.
Always changing. Yeah. Right. Technology alone is changing, right? Like basic bookkeeping rules, yes, those do not change. Generally accepted accounting principles do not change. However, technology changes.
Your tools change.
Tools change. Yep. Tax strategy changes, which is part of the bookkeeping process to make sure that you also are embedding tax strategy into it. But even if you think about how your daily transactions change in your business and the circumstances that come up in any given like selling dynamic in your business, right? Like, how do I mark this down? How do I do gift cards that I'm going to do giveaways? Like, there's always little things that if they're not handled appropriately if you're not guided of how to handle them in your point of sale system, it makes it hard to catch it in your bookkeeping system. And you've got to know both technologies and you've got to know bookkeeping general guidelines in order to capture it in a way that's going to benefit you to use financials to manage your business and to get to a tax return in a clean, tidy, and strategic manner. The one thing too that I want to say about just about bookkeeping and DIY versus retail specific expert bookkeeping is that we're accountants by degree, right? So we go a layer up from bookkeeping. Bookkeeping is just recording the transactions and reconciling out to make sure everything is accounted for. Accounting is where we're looking at it from an analytical standpoint, offering guidance and suggestions, making sure that we bring your creative sight line into where opportunity lays. We always say that every set of reports that you run, which I just give you a ton of information to run on your reports, should always be looked at as one opportunity or one celebration, then one area to optimize an opportunity, and then one gap leak, like a leak hole, like plug the leak, fill the gap, right? If you literally look at every report with those three perspectives, you're going to start to gain really truly like action and focus versus just staring at them and not knowing what to look for. Look for all three of those, one every single week, hopefully. But when it comes to actually hiring somebody that is not only a trained accountant, but proficient in your industry and an expert in this industry, where the benefit comes from is like, say, the work that we do, for example, is the bottom layer of bookkeeping. We start out with our own chart of accounts that's retail specific. It's not the generalized chart of accounts that comes out of QuickBooks when you subscribe and get your first chart of accounts. It's retail specific, and it's designed so that the reader, which is you, the business owner, the reader actually can look at it and say, I can see five. It's designed in six areas of your business to focus on so that you can draw your eyes to segments of your business and make decisions in those segments, which means then that income statement, for example, profit and loss, all of a sudden becomes usable to you. So the way we organize it is very first is gross profit margin, revenue less cost of goods sold, taking into consideration freight in and freight out expenses. What decisions do you need to make in that section of your financial statements? And then when you get to operating expenses, we organize that chart of accounts by five expense categories: occupancy, compensation, selling overhead, that's an investment category, administrative expenses, and operating expenses. And if you start to look at those five categories of your business, you're making decisions differently in each of them. when you look at your selling expenses and all of the accounts that go under that, your advertising, your point of sale subscriptions, your merchant fees, your design and branding, your maybe your displays, whatever it is, you know, your retail supplies, that all lands in selling. And that is you selling your product to your brand, to your customer, using the proper technology and advertising initiatives and techniques. That's investment. So we want to make sure there's enough money going into that category. That's a very different analysis, segmenting your thinking, than you would put into admin and operating expenses, because those are normally very variable. We don't want to have waste, all the things. And the same with compensation. We want to make sure that compensation as a category in your financial statements, all transactions lumped together and giving you one beautiful total, is within range of what your industry says it should be. And we always say 13% compensation. Are you in range or out of range? And the same with your occupancy, because occupancy is a commitment space where you're making decisions as a go, all right, like I'm committed to a lease. I've got to make sure I can fit this in, but can I afford those repairs and maintenances right now, or can I defer them? So we bring it into those five categories, six categories as a whole, to break it down into chunks, to make analyzing it far more digestible, and to make decisions a lot easier. But then we also apply profit first strategy to them to say, all right, if we've got to spread 100% of our revenue between these categories, or even like 80% because we are going to push profit into a different bank account, what does that look like and how do we stay true? So when you're hiring a retail specific accountant or bookkeeper that is also understands tax law in our industry, you get this power punch that delivers meaningful financials, puts them in a format that makes sense to you and how you lead and make decisions in your business, can guide you through those decisions, understands your technology so the reporting is accurate and more transparent with clarity, and then can also coach and consult you on your decisions. Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting because we're coming into the crunch time for a lot of retailers before WESA, right? Because they're going to have to make some decisions before they even go. And that is, you know, how much do they invest in current product lines? But also, it's always a tough decision on bringing on new product lines or new categories even. And that's always, it's kind of, you know, you're going in with an educated guess that it's going to work. And that depends on a lot of things. You kind of know your customer, but you don't know exactly if this line's going to, you have an inkling, but you don't know for sure. And I assume that when you're guiding your customers through that, you're giving them kind of a guideline of a dollar amount or percentage that they can spend on that new category, right? Based on all the things you just talked about, those five categories that we already talked about, what can I afford to put toward this? Rather than just going, I'm going to do it and figure it out later.
100%. So we send our clients to market with what we call an inventory buy to sell plan. And that plan comes from that optimization strategy that I had already talked about early on. And that plan will literally tell you when you're buying for any given season and the months within that season, how much do you spend at cost value for each of your categories. And then we break it down, even if you want to break it down to like vendors, right? To say, I've got my 12 categories and I'm spending in my product type categories. How does that fit within my vendor relationships and what I'm buying by my vendor? But we also will come in and say, if you're wanting to test new product categories and or new product lines, let's reserve like say 5% or 10% of that buying budget for those new categories. So we go in with a plan to say, don't go in all deep, right? Take, if you've got your tops category or your tack category, for example, and you're wanting to try something new, take 5 to 10% of that money that's already built in the plan and invest it into that new category or brand itself and go from there, right? So we send ours to even just iterate on that is your ideal. If you're going to market, here would be like my hope for you, is that you're going to market with a inventory buying plan that tells you how much to buy in order for delivery for the season, broken down by month, for each product type category, all the way down to knowing how much you should spend at your top 10, at least your top 10 vendors from that buy plan, and how wide versus deep you should go if you are in any form of apparel or accessories, wide versus deep. How many packs do you order? Because that comes down to how many styles are you delivering in your collections and such. Is the wide versus deep conversation is very broad normally, and we literally just give it to you in a mathematical formula. How many styles do you want to carry? How much is in your collections in your new release strategy? Here's your wide versus deep based on what you can sell. But Glenn, it's all anchored on really, truly like all of that. That would be like the most beautiful inventory plan. If we could get that in front of the most of you guys, we'd be so happy. That's our Financially Fabulous, like our guided profit and scale system. But here's what it is your inventory plan is only as good as you understanding what your logical and realistic revenue potential is. Because most inventory buying, which is why we're marking down unnecessarily, which is why we're going into inventory debt, most inventory buying is based on vanity revenue goals or your over your growth goals. When instead they should be anchored with a formula that is based on average order value, what you logically and realistically have shown that you can accomplish for average order value, how well is your team selling? Average order value plus your new customers and returning customers and how often they recur, right? It's a mathematical equation, very easy to punch into a worksheet, and that will give you logical and realistic revenue. And then once you have logical and realistic revenue, we buy to that because we can always chase product, but why would we want to spend time trying to discount what we shouldn't have bought in the first place? Because we were buying for revenue goals. We never had the opportunity to sell anyway because we weren't there yet with our customer base. Yeah. So that's where it really truly all starts when it comes to heading to market.
And, you know, it is interesting because a lot of factors go into all of this, too, and it changes every year. Weather, in our case, yeah. Right? Yes. Especially in the horse world. Blankets, you know, is a big purchase that we make every year. And you have to buy them because once they ship those blankets, you can't order again in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. They're sold out. So yeah. You're committing to what you're going to buy for the year, right?
Right.
And, you know, economy always plays a factor. You know, that always plays a factor. But those are common things that just happen every year. Those are variables that happen every year. Yeah. And I guess we have to take those into account, too, right? If I bought a bunch of blankets and we had a very mild year and nobody bought blankets, then... Mm-hmm. It wasn't my fault necessarily because we had a mild year. I couldn't control that. Yeah. It goes the other way too. There were many years we bought in all those blankets and we sold out in a month and we could have had 10 times more, but the weather was exceptionally cold that year. You know, and you can't, you do what you can with those types of situations. So if you were, one final thing before heading into WESA, what would you tell everybody?
One final thing. Okay, so we already determined going into WESA with a logical and realistic revenue perspective, with an inventory plan that's optimized to match it. I would say...
But those new boots are so cute.
I know. I was just going to say... This is what I was saying. It's like,
be creative. You know where I was going.
Yes, be creative with your inventory dollars. Here's what I've learned, truly, when I work with clients over and over again, and we really get them to be disciplined on their inventory plan, they become more creative, and they deliver better product to their customers because they're buying with constraints. And buying with constraints just means that if I have an inventory plan, and I know I'm going in with $10,000 to spend, not $20,000, on a particular product line and or product type, and I know that I need however many units, when I see five different selections, I'm going to narrow it down to one or two or three out of the five, but I'm also going to be looking at how I can optimize my margin. Which one am I choosing that gives me the best margin? And the selection just gets more curated, right? Like when you put yourself in this lane to say, I can't have it all, I have to pick the best of the best because this is the budget, you truly can actually be more creative than less, because now you're curating. You're curating to your customer. You're curating to what you know is going to sell versus just throwing spaghetti at the wall. Like, right? Like just say, I'm going to buy all of it because they're just going to select something. And then you've really true. In many instances, we create overwhelm for our customer in giving them too many selections as well. So I say, take a different perspective. My experience is take a different perspective. Sometimes having some restraints can lead to a higher level of creativity and have fun with it. If not this, then that, because that is the better one, right? So I don't, that's the way I would lead with it. Mm-hmm. And stick to the budget. If the money's not there, if it's not on the plan, just pick the best of the options and go with it.
I imagine when you get hired into a lot of retailers, that over inventory is the biggest thing you probably see walking in the door.
It is.
It's just
hands down.
Yeah, and I would imagine that's number one.
Yeah. And it's usually in our industry, it's crazy how economically smart when it comes to operating expense most of our retailers are. It's inventory that gets them into trouble.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally, because we're pretty good at the staff and all that stuff. We figured that out, right?
Right.
I agree. I agree with the inventory. And I worked for a lot of retailers over the years, and it was always that battle. And back then, we didn't really have the reports we do now, too. And, mm-hmm. you know, we haven't touched on AI, but even, I mean, AI is adding to understanding the reports even more. I mean, those tools are coming into play. We have had a couple sessions here on AI. They're coming into play, and they're going to be more in play through the Shopify's and everybody else down the line too. Yeah. So if somebody wanted to hire a firm like yours to help them out, is it a retainer? How's it work?
So, okay. The traditional accounting industry is different than the we're definitely consider ourselves.
You're more consultants.
Yeah, we're more consultants. Yeah.
Yep.
Our business model. So traditional accounting firm would be on a retainer, kind of like call them when I need them. They charge me for their hours. We don't operate that way. We have not for years. We're on a subscription-based retainer model because our brand vision and our entire model is financial health, financial clarity, financial empowerment. And so we very much bring education into our relationship.
So you're more like accounting consultants, really.
Accounting consultants, financial planners. All of the work that we do is anchored in our financial GPS system. So when you get your accounting and your financial statements and your sales tax and your income taxes, like traditional accounting firm deliverables and compliance, you get that here at She Profits Now. But our value in that subscription model comes in is what do we do with the data? How do we use the data to make better decisions? How do we empower ourselves to make those decisions independent of a consultant month over month over month over month? And that's our coaching program is we literally give you the framework, the tool set, teach you how to use it, give you the guidance, give you the coaching, but yet are in your back pocket as a retainer while also delivering your accounting and financial statements, traditional accounting.
And I'm sure there's a lot of smaller retailers that think they can't afford you. How do you answer that?
Yeah. You know what?
You hear it all the time, I'm sure.
Hear it all the time. Oh, yeah. Hear it all the time. Right. So we do have different layers of pricing. Where I say when somebody says they can't afford us, even at our lowest bracket, I will say that I've tested what you pay for onesie, twosie services, right? What you would pay for a bookkeeper, then you add your tax accountant, then you add your sales tax, even if it's just a subscription through TaxJar or Avalara, then you add your inventory planner to it. You're paying way more than you do with us because we bundle it, because ours is actually like an ecosystem that works together, so we don't have all those layers of information in zone one, information in zone two. It's all in one zone, which creates a massive amount of efficiency for us, which allows us to be more affordable.
Which allows me as a retailer to save a lot of time too, which is
of time because it's an ecosystem of decision-making data and intelligence really is what we deliver. When they say they can't afford us, I always first say is number one, like to bring it to the psychological layer of it is number one, when the clients come on and they use our system the way it's designed to be used, we pay for ourselves.
And I would imagine that would happen pretty quickly, actually.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we will pay for ourselves because we're not only keeping you compliant and keeping like the professional services side of it running, but we're giving you decision-making tools so that you eliminate costly mistakes, so that you're more strategic with every dollar coming through your company and how it's utilized. And then even just your own future potential to make decisions independently, that pays for itself in the long run as well. There's a compounding effect there. And we're very passionate about that, making sure that our clients are living through their business using our tools and our knowledge that we give them to their advantage without feeling like they always have to tap us for every decision. Like that independence is huge.
When I think too, I think all business, not just retail, but wholesale and even mine, you know, in the podcasting world or entertainment or whatever. My wife has always reminded me over the last 10 years that we are no longer a retailer. We're no longer an entertainer. All of us are in the data business. We're in the business of data. That's it. The data is the business now. And, you know, the more and more that the internet and all of that has come into play, data is it. We're all dealing in data. It's how we use the data to our advantage. And, you know, whether that's selling more stuff or whatever that is, it's the data that's the most important thing in all businesses now.
Yep. And I love that you said to our advantage, because that's where my mind was going as I was listening to is like, we're serving our customers through not only product, but also experience. But it's the data that's giving us the ability to have the edge.
Yes.
Above and beyond our competitors.
But that's where the edge is in the data. Yeah. Yep. And understanding the data. I would say that too. We can see the data, but we have to understand the data. And you know, that's where somebody like you comes in.
Education is definitely, it's crazy how we switched from being just over, right? Like everybody has their evolution. I mean, I'm a degreed accountant. Yes. I started my business in 1997. So that like really dates me, but I was just a bookkeeping firm. And then I learned and grew into tax and then advisory. And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait a minute, I really want to educate because I'm tired of just dishing out financial statements and compliance that nobody understands.
It
I
want to
make a difference. And then all of a sudden we became really, truly an education company, right? And an empowerment company and all the things, which is because we recognized the need for data-backed decision-making early on. And I just wanted to be a part of it. I didn't want to be part of the problem. I wanted to be the solution.
So. And that is not going to change. It's even going to get more on the data side. That's going to continue evolving as the tools evolve. You know, AI is just one of them. But you know, all the tools are changing all the time. And I don't care what business you're in, right? That's true of any business that we're in. Well, where can people find you?
SheProfitsNow.com. Jump on there. Learn more about us. What we actually do to start conversations is, if you jump on our website, we have a conversation, get the conversation started form that our prospects or those interested in learning more fill out. And then we respond to that form by sending out an information pack, basically about like, here's where you would land in our ecosystem based on what you're telling us on your intake. And it's a great place to just give more information as part of the decision-making process, because we truly, since we are very educational as well as compliance and accounting driven, is we always really look for good fit, because every dollar counts in your business. We want to make sure that you're like, we're an investment, not an expense for our clients. And so that's just where we start, is to educate you on what we do, how we can benefit you, let you kind of walk you into the decision that you're trying to make with an adequate amount of information. But that's on SheProfitsNow.com.
Very good. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
And maybe I'll see you in January over WESA.
I'm going to tap you and see if we can find you somewhere floating around that beautiful floor.
I know. It is hard to find people if you don't talk to them. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us today for the Retail Roundup. To watch the Retail Roundups, check the WESA Trade Show YouTube channel. You can find all of them over there, and you can stay up to date with us on our Facebook group, WESA Trade Show, and at WESA Trade Show.com. You know what? We're here every Thursday with a brand new episode of something for you. And I hope, I don't know if I'll be back. You know, you'll probably be at WESA by the next time we do one of these. So have a terrific and very successful show, everybody. In Dallas, I'm kind of jealous because I always get to go out to eat at good restaurants when we're there. So we're kind of jealous that way. So have a great time, everybody, and enjoy your show.